This edition of the Monocle Arts Review was first broadcast on the 1st of May 2015 on Monocle 24. Welcome to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian Tobias. Today, I'm joined by Little White Lies editor David Jenkins to review something old, something new, something borrowed, but hopefully nothing blue. We'll be discussing the remake of the 1967 film Far From the Madding Crowd, the remastered version of Federico Fellini's legendary 8½, and a documentary all about virtuoso piano player Marta Argerich, as told by her daughter Stephanie. That's all to come right here on the Monocle Arts Review. Welcome to the show, David. Let's begin with an oldie, but still very much a goodie. This is the remastered version of Federico Fellini's Oscar-winning 8½. This is arguably Fellini's most revered films, which was initially released in 1963 and is loved by cinema fanatics and directors all around the globe. Now, David, first, give us a sense, for those who have heard about it but not seen it, why is this film such a iconic classic?
Well, I guess I better precede my explanation of this by saying that although indeed this film is considered one of the canonical classics in a 2012 Sight and Sound poll, which looked to discover the greatest films of all time, polling many, many critics and filmmakers, I think it came in at number 10. So it's obviously beloved by many. But I have to put my hands up and say this is one of those great sort of, you know, monoliths of cinema, which I just don't get. I'm sorry to say, and I know that will seem sacrilege in many circles, but there's just something about it that I've given it a couple of watches over the years, left a few years in between in the hope that maybe my taste will develop and something will come out of it, or I will grow and learn to understand it, but it just hasn't quite happened yet.
Well, let's have a listen to a clip from 8½, and then we can unravel it, or try to unravel it further.
Indeed.
Guido, Guido, dove corri, disgraziato?
Vieni qua, buffone.
Ah, ma allora è una parte che devo fare. Mi hai preso per una delle tue...
Guido. Well, I think 8½ is the kind of film that people either love or hate. It was in Italian, so we couldn't understand necessarily what they were saying, but in a way that doesn't really matter to the film because does it have a plot?
No, it doesn't, I don't think. Well, I mean, it has a sort of vague, you know, inertia, I guess. There's a sort of, it's about this film director played by Marcello Mastroianni, who is having trouble making this bizarre, indistinct sci-fi spectacle in Italy in the 60s. And there's a joke at the beginning of the film where he has a script doctor come to him and give pass him all these notes telling him why his film's awful and why it doesn't work. It has no philosophical drive. It has no emotional core. It has no ending. And a couple of scenes later, you see Mastroianni tearing up his notes and throwing it away. And in a sense, I think that the joke is that's the film that Fellini is intending to make, and he's unapologetic about that fact. And what the film is essentially looking at the production of this film, but taking all these diversions into Mastroianni's dreams. And sorry, Mastroianni plays a director called Guido. I think you heard in the clip, the film is full of people shouting, Guido, Guido,
Guido. Guido. I think it's ended up in many commercials on television as well. In terms of whether you love him or hate him, so many directors have been influenced by him. And when people say this director took a very Fellini-esque take on things, what to you is Fellini-esque?
Well, I guess it means that the scenes are very slightly like a kind of controlled haphazardness, I guess. And there's, you know, lots of participation from many people. There are tableau constructions and there's a sort of grandiosity as well and a grotesqueness. I think that the most Fellini-esque film, or the film that pastiches Fellini, or I mean maybe not pastiche, but is enthralled to 8.5 is Woody Allen's Stardust Memories, which you know, I love Woody Allen, but that's actually another film I really hate as well. So not only do I not like Fellini, I don't like the people who like Fellini. So,
well, there you go. But for those who do, or for those who don't know, 8.5 is being shown in selected art house cinemas across the UK from today. And of course, you can always indulge in a DVD or a download wherever in the world you happen to be. Well, we've had a remaster. Now let's have a remake. This is Thomas Vinterberg's interpretation of Far From the Madden Crowd, the Thomas Hardy novel, which was first turned into a movie in 1967 by John Schlesinger. This is perhaps a hard act to follow. How do the two films compare, do you think?
Oh, God, I'm going to sound like a real downer this week.
Oh, dear.
I must say I did. I think the 67 version is pretty superior in every way. It's a very different film for a very different crowd, I think. Madden crowd, indeed. And
well, tell us a bit first, maybe about the director, his background. Why do you think he was drawn to this? Very, very different from his
past. Very strange. Thomas Vinterberg is probably best known as one of the sort of founding fathers of the Dogma 95 movement, which was this movement in Danish cinema where it was an idea of stripping back cinema to its absolute aesthetic core, using digital cameras, no sound, you know, making very, very pure cinematic statements. And I guess in the sort of intervening years, he has made, I think, Far From the Madding Crowd is possibly confirmation of his transformation from this kind of enfant terrible to someone who's quite respectable, you know.
The original version had incredible performances from Alan Bates, Terrence Stamp, Julie Christie. Oh, so memorable. How does this cast, can you talk us through the main stars and how they manage the roles?
Well, it's an interesting one because I think in this new movie, it's the casting that's maybe slightly problematic and is sort of goes towards why I think this version doesn't quite work.
And the casting is
well, you have Carey Mulligan as Bathsheba Everdeen, who you know is very, very good. It's a very sort of different role for her, and she's very strong and sensual and very, very. It's a very internalized performance, I think, and it's not very showy, but in a really nice way. Then as Gabriel Oak, who, you know, you had Alan Bates as Gabriel Oak in the 67 version with his kind of, you know, all dependable. He had a beard and no moustache. He had all the goodness and strength, and he was just like, he was the Oak, you know. And I think there was this concept, the idea that he was not meant to be the, you know, he was the sort of lesser of two evils when it came to choosing which man to go with. A very boring man. But so in this new version, we have the actor Matthias Schoenaerts playing Gabriel Oak. And I mean, obviously it's radio, so we can't really get a sense of what he looks like across. But he does look like a huge hulking Belgian supermodel. And you're watching the film and you're just the whole time is in your mind, she's obviously going to go with him. I mean, look at him. He's strapping. He looks like a kind of calendar model or something.
The screen loves him as well. You know?
The camera does love him. And he's an interesting guy because he as well started off making these quite transgressive movies. There's a movie called Rust and Bone and another one called Bullhead. And he's made this transition into what seems like only making very sort of middle-brow costume dramas.
Steamy.
Yeah,
well.
Yeah. Sort of bodice rippers.
Let's now interrupt the conversation to have a listen to the new version of Far From the Man Crowd.
From now on, you have a mistress, not a master. I don't yet know my talents in farming, but I shall do my best. Don't suppose because I'm a woman I don't know the difference between bad goings-on and good. I shall be up before you are awake. I shall be afield before you are up. It is my intention to astonish you all. Back to work, please.
Does this new version seem relevant, contemporary, or dated, do you think? Do you feel it has contemporary resonances in the overall arc of the storyline, the characters?
I don't know. I mean, there's definitely a sense that the writer, David Nichols, who adapted it, was trying to push a kind of more modern feminist element to the material. And, you know, it has Carey Mulligan saying lines about how she doesn't want to be defined by the men in her life. And I guess that, you know, it kind of runs with that progressive political element. But I think it very much plays a very straight bat on bringing this kind of beloved film to life once more for a new audience. And I don't think it's very that much interested in making any grand modern statements or anything like that.
Well, there you go. If despite all that you're tempted, Far From the Madding Crowd is rolling out in cinemas around the world from today. Well, we're going to end now with a documentary. This is Argerich, or Bloody Daughter, as it's known in English-speaking countries. This tells the story of the world-renowned pianists Marta Argerich and Stephen Kovacevic, two giants of classical music, seen here under the scrutiny of their daughter, Stephanie. This was filmed across two decades. This was filmed over two decades. So I'm wondering, how does it unfold?
Well, it's interesting because I mean, one of the interesting things about this film is that as much as it's about Marta Argerich and her life and her family, it also tells this kind of parallel story about media technology and how it's changed over the last 20 years. Because throughout the film, you have all these very different types of ways of recording intimate family life. So you have like camcorders and old black and white film cameras and modern mobile phones. And it's a really nice kind of gives you this real sense of time passing. You know, I think you understand the aesthetic and how it changes. And
well, many people may not know the pianist, but let's have a little listen to the documentary about her.
Michelle. When I was little, I couldn't understand why my mother spent so long signing autographs. It took ages, and it irritated me that she should devote herself like that to her fans. Once, I bit one of them. Nowadays, I'm touched by the passion people feel for her, and my childhood beliefs resurface. My mother is a supernatural being, in touch with something beyond the reach of ordinary mortals. In fact, I'm the daughter of a goddess.
And that was a clip from Bloody Daughter, a documentary directed by Stephanie Argerich about her mother. Now, it's interesting. There have been a lot of documentaries where the sibling or the daughter tells the story. Does it become sycophantic? Is it an interesting interpretation of her mother's life?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, there's a really nice intimacy to the film. And, you know, it's a sense that this woman, Stephanie, doesn't really know who her mother is, and it's the film is a sort of process of self-discovery, I guess. She's trying to look at how she saw her mother when she was young, how she sees her now, and I guess she's trying to get some answers as to how they're, you know, the nature of their relationship, and you know how her mother's fame and how her work as a concert pianist has affected their relationship and how Stephanie had been brought up.
And you talk about her fame, but for those people who aren't really into classical music, many of us may not have known about her. Does the music play a part in it? Do you get a sense of how extraordinarily talented this pianist was?
Yeah, I mean, I think the film does it in a really clever but quite pithy way. I mean, you get some intro context archive footage of Argerich playing at the age of 28, playing Chopin and winning a competition. And, you know, you just know from that scene that she is a virtuoso, that she's going to go on to become a virtuoso, and that, you know, her greatness comes through in a very simple, quick moment. And I think one of the things the film is also about is that the mother communicates through her music. So it's almost like all her emotion and energy goes into her music to the point where she can't actually communicate with people. And there's a really interesting scene where she's playing with an ensemble as a part of a She has a sort of orchestra with her, and she's playing and playing and playing, and she's sort of lost in the music. And then when the conductor stops her, and she kind of makes these bizarre guttural noises and half formed words and sentences, and he can't understand her, and she's kind of trying to get across what she's thinking, but just can't say it because she almost speaks in music, I think. And I think that kind of is a clue as to why she maybe was slightly estranged from her daughter for so many years.
And the film sort of follows 20 years. It took a number of years to make. But how do you think it will do commercially? Do you think it will interest people beyond the little niche of classical music?
I'm not sure, really. I do think that people who are, or have a sort of awareness of who Argerich is, are obviously going to have a bit more connection to the material and desire to see her. I mean, the appeal for people who know her is that she apparently is very media shy and hasn't done a lot in front of cameras and and spoken to journalists over the years. So the film does offer a very, very rare glimpse of her sort of family life and, you know, the creative process. So I guess in those terms, it'll be interesting for the hardcore fans. But I think the story about, I guess, Stephanie's story would probably be the more universally appealing element, and I guess sort of brings this highly rarefied subject matter to a slightly wider audience.
Well, that will be the sequel. But for now, Argerich or Bloody Daughter, directed by Stephanie Argerich, which is well worth seeing, is in a cinema near you. And that brings us to the end of today's show. David Jenkins, thank you very much for joining us in studio. You've been listening to the Monocle Arts Review with me, Gillian DeBias. My producer was Holly Fisher, and my researcher was Fernando Augusto Pacheco. Join us again on Monday when we'll preview this year's Venice Biennale with Ossian Ward. Until then, goodbye from me. Thanks for listening, and have a great weekend.